20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers Nation? Happy Monday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Today is the 2,433rd consecutive day with a Pack-A-Day Podcast in some way, shape, or form. That goes all the way back, obviously, to our very first episode on the audio platforms. There have been a lot of Pack-A-Day Podcasts since then. I'm glad that you are here for this one. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews, and check out those Pack-A-Day Podcast memberships as well. Shout out to Rob Chazimski and Glenn Iverson for becoming brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members. Appreciate that a ton. We had a bunch of news and notes. No, we had none. We had no news and notes over the weekend for the Packers. A pretty nondescript weekend overall, which allows us to get right away into our main topic for today. If you do not have the opportunity to view the episodes over the weekend, I highly recommend checking those out. We had a lot of great content, obviously, from our audio podcasters, for myself. On Saturday, I went over why the weapons in Green Bay are, I think, being overlooked a little bit and underrated quite a bit. So make sure to check out that one. And then yesterday I just did a really, really fun one of like some outside of the box ideas and how Green Bay could upgrade their weapons. So check those out if you haven't already. But today our main topic is going to be a totally different sort of topic altogether. And that is going to be our deep dive on Nate Hobbs. Now we've done the deep dive on Mecole Hardman already. We've done it on Aaron Banks. And today we kind of finalize at least the trio of free agent signings so far by reviewing Nate Hobbs and doing a deep dive on his scouting report profile, et cetera. Excited to dive into this one. I know it took me a little bit longer to get to his. Obviously, we've known about Hobbs for a while now, but it takes a while to go through the film, especially with everything else going on. So finally have the opportunity to digest it all. And here were my findings from everything that I found out about Nate Hobbs. First of all, he was a fifth round pick by the Raiders in 2021, 6'1", 195. His like height is all over the place. It sounds like when he tested or was at the combine, it was a little over 5'11", a little over 5'11 and a half. So we're rounding that bad boy up to 6 foot. So 6'1", 195. He is 25 years old. He turns 26 in June. And this is a very Green Bay type signing in that regard. They usually don't like to go overaged at any position. They usually like players still in the prime of their career. And Nate Hobbs is a very great example of that, being only 25 and again turning 26 in June. You look at a four-year contract, right? He's going to be 26, 27, 28, 29 through the length of that four-year deal if he does see it through to completion. From a relative athletic score standpoint, he was a 9.61 RAS profile coming out of college, a 96th percentile athlete. He tested 65th percentile in height, 77th percentile in weight, 83rd percentile in bench press, 96th percentile in vertical jump, 99th percentile in broad jump, 73rd percentile in the 40-yard dash, 70th percentile in the short shuttle, and 68th percentile in the three cone. So above average at everything. I mean, everything. And a ridiculous 96th percentile vertical jump and 99th percentile broad jump, which shows the explosiveness, which does show up on tape. Good change of direction, good height, good weight, good bench press. He sort of had it all. Kind of crazy to think he was a fifth round pick in hindsight, but this is the type of athlete that Green Bay, we know, loves if they can get their hands on him. It's funny. This is not really anything here nor there. But if you go to Mock Draftable and look at the two players that are the most like athletic profiles, it is two former Packers, actually. Corey Ballantyne and Will Blackman are the two athletic profiles that match closely to Nate Hobbs. Now, you might think of like, oh, great, they found another, you know, Corey Ballantyne or Will Blackman. That doesn't mean anything. It's just like from like height, weight, speed, athletic profile sort of things. It does not mean the player that they are or anything like that. It doesn't always translate. In fact, it almost never does. But those, it was just interesting that, again, Green Bay kind of has a type. Now, Will Blackman was obviously a while back, but Corey Ballantyne and now Nate Hobbs, all very similar athletic type profiles. He is, of course, a corner. He can play outside in the slot. We'll talk about some of that versatility more in just a minute as well. As far as when he was coming out of the draft, I always love going back and looking at the draft notes. This was the sort of overall breakdown from Lance Zierlein of NFL.com, who I will say once again, I think does a phenomenal job every single year. This was the, is a, again, his kind of final overview of Nate Hobbs. Athletic corner with excellent combination of size and speed for the NFL game. Hobbs has plenty of experience in cover three and press man techniques. His size and length can be a major factor in wrecking contested catches, but he rarely locates the ball when phasing downfield. From zone, his foot quickness and athletic ability stand out, but his route recognition and instincts need to improve. His tackle strength is a big plus in his favor, but his game took a step back in 2020, which was a little disappointing. There are enough traits and tools to warrant a day three look. So that was the scouting report coming out of college for Nate Hobbs. From a PFF standpoint, here were his grades throughout the course of his career. In 2021, he played 894 snaps with an 80.1 grade. In 2022, he had 667 snaps with a 60.9 grade. In 2023, 775 snaps with a 69.0 grade. And in 2024, 554 snaps with a 61.4 grade. Worth noting here that, again, 60 is PFF's average grade. So a really good rookie season at 80.1 when he played the most snaps that he's ever played. And then average, above average, average is what we've kind of seen from, again, PFF's standpoint. Take it or leave it if you want. That's just one way of looking at it. Of course, it's not the be-all end-all, but it's always just kind of interesting to see where PFF ranks these players. As far as his coverage grade goes, as a rookie, he had a 78.0. As a sophomore, he had a 57.1. In his third season, 68.1. And then last year, he was a 61.5. So well above average, slightly below average, above average, right around average. His run defense grades have been 78.6, 75.1, 78.8, and 62.1. And then his tackling grades have been 54.8, 53.1, 42.3, and 37.6. So his tackling grades have gone down year over year from 54.8, 53.1, 42.3 to 37.6 this past year. Trust me, we will talk about that in just a moment. From a coverage standpoint, again, this is all via PFF. In 2024, he was targeted 46 times, allowing 31 completions, a 67.4% completion percentage, only allowed 280 yards, three touchdowns, one interception, three pass breakups, zero penalties, which is crazy, and a 96.3 passer rating. In 2023, he was targeted 82 times on 775 snaps, 63 completions, a 76.8% completion percentage for 588 yards, three touchdowns, one interception, four pass breakups, four penalties, and a 103.1 passer rating. In his career, he's been targeted 251 times, 189 completions, 75.3% completion percentage, 1,825 yards, nine touchdowns, three picks, 13 pass breakups, 11 penalties, and a 102.1 passer rating. One of the really, really fun and cool stats about Nate Hobbs, he has played four seasons. He has played over 554 snaps in every one of those seasons, or at least at 554 this past year, but he has played a lot of snaps. And in his career as a corner, whether it's outside or inside, the longest completion that he has allowed in his career, 39 yards. I mean, that is massively impressive. I mean, again, some of the things like zero penalties last year and the longest completion he's ever allowed in his entire career so far, 4 years in the NFL of basically being a starting corner, 39 yards. That is an unbelievable statistic, like just absolutely unbelievable. One of the things that is worth noting here is he has had a lot of injuries. In 2024, he missed four games with an ankle injury. In 2023, he missed four games with an ankle injury. And in 2022, he missed six games with a broken hand. So he has had a variety of ailments that have caused him to miss a variety of games throughout the course of his career. All right, let's get into the film and the scouting report. This is my notes. This is what I saw on tape. So we're going to kind of go through the positives first, then we'll go through the negatives after that. The positives, number one, is his versatility. Can play in the slot, can play outside, can play left or right. He's even gone on to say he can play safety. Green Bay will not have any need for him to play safety whatsoever with the depth that they have at the position. But sometimes, depending on how players age, right, sometimes they might take a step back and sometimes they make that transition to safety rather than corner if they lose a little bit of that speed. But overall, he's a great athlete. I don't necessarily see that coming. But number two, again, with Green Bay safety room, you expect him to be a corner through and through. And we know that's going to be the case. So he is going to be, I think, an outside corner for Green Bay that can also kick inside. And you just love the fact he can line up everywhere. We know that Green Bay values versatility a ton, the ability to line up everywhere. And by the way, I want to go back to that safety comment for just a moment, right? If you remember, this past year, Green Bay played a lot of inverted cover two. If you remember, that's like the safeties come up and play the intermediate routes, the short, shallow routes, and then the corners actually go back and play the deep version of that. Well, you're basically a safety in that situation. So he might not ever line up at safety, but if you're playing some inverted cover two, he's going to end up back in those positions. And we know that those defensive backs are going to be very malleable in Jeff Affley's defense. It's not, I wouldn't go as far as to say like it's positionless football in the defensive backfield where safeties are playing corner and corners are playing safeties, but it can be on some specific plays. And the fact that all of those players can kind of do a variety of those different things, it does give Jeff Hafley a lot of versatility and a lot of leeway to be able to call some really fun and unique defenses. And Nate Hobbs' versatility will go a long way, I think, in even making it more fun and more exciting with some of the things that Hafley's able to do this upcoming season. I love the fact that he has had very few penalties. Now, I think at times you want to be able to have a tactical penalty, if you will, right? If you're guarding a wide receiver on an out and up and you take that bait on the out and they're going up and there's nobody behind you, it's tactical foul time. Like in soccer, you're going to take that yellow card in order to take the tactical foul so they don't get a breakaway, something like that. You want to grab that guy. We'll take the 10-yard penalty, right? We'll take the holding penalty. We'll drag him to the ground or a spot foul right there. You're not giving up that 60-yard touchdown, right? But that being said, I would be a little bit maybe more concerned over that if we saw some big completions that he was giving up. But the longest completion has been 39 yards in his career. So the fact that he is not penalizing, specifically playing on the interior and in the slot, is really impressive because we've talked about it in that slot. You get thrown everything your way. You get thrown pulling offensive linemen, which there's that the old way of doing it, which you go low on him, which is now a penalty. You'll still see corners do it from time to time and get called for it. So he hasn't done that. He's taken on the blocks. We see, you know, those corners have to go against the shiftier wide receivers, the guys who have two-way goes, and it's so easy to grab in those situations. The speed wide receivers, where they get a step on you, and it's so easy to grab in those situations. The fact that he's just stayed sort of calm, composed, poised, and under control, and hasn't got grabby in those situations is really impressive. And one of the things that showed up on tape with that is that he does not get panicky at the catch point. And that's where it's such a bad trait to have as a corner. We've talked about it before. If you're running down the field with a wide receiver and the ball's in the air and the corner can tell, and they start panicking and freaking out and throwing limbs everywhere, what's going to happen? They're going to get called for a variety of pass interference or holding penalties, or they get grabby, more often pass interference because the ball's in the air by that point, but they're going to start panicking and getting themselves into trouble. Or they're not going to locate the ball and the receiver's just going to come up with the ball anyway. But Hobbs does not panic at the catch point. He continues to play the ball. He gets his head turned, and when need be and when capable, he can make a play on the ball as well. So I love the fact that he is not a often penalized player, and it shows up on tape with the way that he plays. Number three, we talked about the tackling. We're going to get to that in the negatives in just a moment. I will say this. He is a willing tackler. His technique needs to get cleaned up quite a bit and has really fallen off over time, but he is more than willing as a tackler. And a lot of times that is half the battle. This is not a corner that is trying to avoid contact. This is not a corner who is not trying to maintain his responsibilities. He is aggressive. He is attacking. He will go up to make the play. Sometimes he just either misses on it or the break the tackle from, you know, out of his grasp, and he does not get the player to the ground. A lot of it comes down to wrapping up. You will see on tape some incredibly impressive form tackles with some power behind it from Nate Hobbs. When he does it the right way, you're going down. When he comes in, and it's not like we're not chicken winging here or anything like that, but he just doesn't get that full wrap on it. And when you see that, other players are breaking the tackles. So if he just kind of cleans up the fundamentals a little bit with his tackling, he will be more than fine. I'm not sure why it hasn't happened these last couple seasons, but he is willing. He is capable. Now it's just, can you get that consistency down? I love the way that he plays under control. He is very, very, very rarely over aggressive on a play or taking a misstep. Everything is calm and composed and keeps everything in front of him. Again, doesn't panic at the catch point. It's just very under control. Not trying to do too much, not trying to go kind of crazy, like just let the game come to him, go make a play, let those athletic traits take over, and you very, very rarely see him out of control in any way. Number five, I love when he has vision on the quarterback, and I think he works very, very well in zone coverage. And you can kind of see when he's got that vision, he's able to go make plays. He does a really great job of kind of, you know, the coordination between keeping the eyes on the quarterback and kind of keeping his eyes on what's going on either in his peripheral vision or behind him. He's just got very good vision overall as a defensive back. And I think he's a little bit better when he's playing in zone and does have that ability to have vision on the quarterback. Here's the thing where I want to go back to the sort of run grades in tackling here. If you remember, his run defense grade was 78.6, 75.1, 78.8, and 62.1, where his tackling grades were 54.8, 53.1, 42.3, and 37.6. And sometimes it feels like maybe that stuff doesn't go hand in hand, right? Like you're looking at the run defense grades and you're like, well, if he's a good run defender, he's got to be a good tackler. PFF separates it. And here's very, very clearly, we'll just kind of get into some of the negatives on this piece of it before we get into our negatives in totality in just a moment. But he, when I say he's a willing tackler, he comes up and fills his gaps aggressively in run defense from the slot, from the outside, wherever he is lined up, he is doing his 111th and crashing in and coming in to make plays. You watch him as a run defender and he is a joy to watch. He takes it very seriously. He wants to do well. He is coming up and attacking it in a good way, not over aggressive, but aggressive. And he makes a lot of plays on running backs too. The tackling is where the issue comes in. And it's great that he's there, but if he's not able to wrap up and make the play, sometimes it can still be very detrimental, right? So I love the way that he attacks as a run defender. No two ways around it. Go and throw the tape on and you will see him, you know, just sprinting to his gap in a good way, like not overcommitting, getting him to where he needs to be. And again, he just very, very assignment sure in that regard. I'm paid to just cover. I'm a cover corner or anything like that. He is a complete player when it comes to that. He really cares about the run defense side of things. Just needs to clean up the tackling. But I love the way that he does his responsibility and fills his gaps that he's responsible for in the run game. As I mentioned, very assignment sure. In fact, there was one play where, again, it was tough to tell, and I didn't really care to go back and break it all down and see what defense they were playing and everything like that. There's one play that I saw on tape where maybe he had missed an assignment. Maybe. And I don't even know for sure, because again, it didn't really matter when there's only one at the end of the day. If it kept happening over and over, I probably would have stopped and went back and watched it a little bit more. But even if it was the one, it's just one, it's not a big deal, right? But it may be one where there was any sort of missed assignment. And again, I can't even say for certainty that it was his fault. So I thought he was extremely assignment sure throughout the course of specifically this past year, but even when I went back and watched some of 2023 as well. As far as I can tell, he seems to be a very good communicator on the field. For those of you who are unfamiliar, on all 22, there is no sound. I don't get to hear anything. I don't get to hear what's going on the field. There's no announcers. There's no nothing. It's just me usually listening to music in the background and watching film, or in this case of this past weekend, watching a lot of college basketball. Awful weekend for college basketball, by the way. If you're a fan of like the higher seeds and, you know, big name teams and, you know, getting to see some of those in the Sweet 16, well, then by all means, this was the tournament for you. No real Cinderella team. I mean, what, one non, I think all 16 teams are from basically Power 5 conferences from a college football standpoint. I know it's a little bit different in basketball, but all of them are from Power 5 conferences. And then you've got, your biggest Cinderella is a number 10 seed, but it's Arkansas. You got BYU, who of course is like sort of a quote unquote Cinderella, or at least a number 6 seed. They beat Wisconsin, of course. Just a brutal weekend of college basketball. I digress. But you can't hear anything on the all 22. So I can't hear what he's saying. I can't, you know, he could be saying like, hey, what'd you have for dinner? And I would have no idea. But it very much seems like he's constantly communicating out there, making sure people are aligned correctly. There's one play where receiver motions in and you can clearly see him communicating to make sure like he's got that guy. And then there's going to be some picks on the outside. There's a throw to the flat. He navigates the picks, immediately gets there, makes a big tackle so that player does not get in the end zone. It was a huge play in the game. It was a big time wide receiver. I can't remember if it was like Tyreek Hill or who it was, but no, it wasn't Tyreek Hill. It was a big time player, whoever it was. And it was a huge play in the game. So just that level of communication, you can definitely see it on tape. Again, I can't hear it, so I can't say 1,000,000,000% for certain, but just looking at it, it certainly seemed like he was very much in communication and very in tune with what was going on out on the field. He can do anything that you ask him to. And I think this is probably one of the things that Brian Gutekunst really loved about his game. If you need him to blitz, he can blitz. If you need him to play the slot, he can play the slot. If you need him to play out wide, he can play out wide. If you need him to go against bigger wide receivers, smaller wide receivers, shiftier wide receivers, tight ends, running backs, he can do all of it. He can play man, he can play zone, cover three, press, off. He can do anything. There isn't anything that you look at his game, other than maybe his tackling a little bit, but that you would ask him to do that you're like, ugh, I don't know if we should trust Nate Hobbs with that. He is capable of doing all of it. We're going to talk to a little bit of a negative side of that in just a moment, but there is nothing that you can ask him that he cannot do. So I think that is another key piece to his game is, again, Jeff Hafley is going to be able to utilize him in a variety of different ways. And whatever it is that they need him for, he's going to be able to go out and execute because he has the ability to do it. He attacks, and I mean attacks, wide receiver screens. I love the way that he plays screens on the outside. He is aggressive. He is physical. He is attacking. And he gets a lot of those things at or behind the line of scrimmage. So throw wide receiver screens at Nate Hobbs at your own risk. And as we see those plays become more and more in vogue and more popular, it's very important that you have corners that can go out and stop those. And Nate Hobbs is very much a stopper of those bubble screens, wide receiver screens, whatever you want to call them on the outside. He's all over them, absolutely all over them. You can use him, as I kind of mentioned just a minute ago, against tight ends as well. So if you have a sort of matchup situation where you're not maybe you don't have a safety who can stick with the tight end, or the linebackers just don't have the speed, and usually corners are a little bit overmatched, he can stick with tight ends. And I think it was Kelce, where like Kelce's going to get a little bit of that separation because he's just a little bit stronger and can kind of box him out and things like that. There's a piece of that, but he can stick with them pretty darn well. And it's just another option that you have. I don't know that it's necessarily maybe going to be your 1A option, but you can absolutely use him on tight ends. And it's not this huge mismatch by any means. He's a really great scheme fit for Jeff Hafley. We kind of talked about this, and whether you need him in zone or you need him in man or whatever you want to ask him to do, play outside, play in the slot. And we know Jeff Hafley is going to mix and match these pieces and change things up in a moment's notice. And he's going to be able to do all of that. So I think he fits perfectly for what Jeff Hafley is going to want him to do. And I really think that he fits a modern day NFL defense. I think what we're seeing more and more with the zone coverage, and more with needing that communication on the back end, a good ability to have vision on the football, rally and tackle. Tackling needs to get cleaned up a little bit, but he rallies to the football. He plays with intensity. I think he is a very, very good modern NFL corner that can do a little bit of everything, that's got all the height, weight, speed that you need, can stick with running backs, wide receivers, tight ends. He's just a very versatile piece. And like I said, it fits very, very well with what Jeff Hafley wants in his defenses. And then last but not least, like we talked about, he does not give up those big plays. 39-yarder is the longest that he's given up in his career. Of course, like any player, it is not just sunshine and rainbows. There are negatives to go along with it as well. The biggest one we've kind of already mentioned, that is the injury issues. If you're going to go out and give a 4-year, $48 million deal to somebody, you want them to be able to go out and play in the games. In fact, if you want to be a cynic about it, you can say like, wait. You're going to get rid of Jaire Alexander primarily because he can't stay healthy at corner. And he has been far better in his career than Nate Hobbs has ever been. And in like Jaire makes $5 million more than what Nate Hobbs would make this year. But you're going to get rid of Jaire Alexander potentially for nothing because of primarily injury issues, but then bring in a corner on a 4-year, $48 million deal who has had injury issues. Make it make sense. And there's a fair level of criticism there, at least like a question mark, something to ask, right? That's one of the biggest flaws he has. 3 consecutive seasons where he's missed 4 games or more. You've got to be able to stay out on the field. If like Nate Hobbs already, right? It might be somebody that is going to have to push to maybe really make that 4 years, $48 million work. And now if you miss games on top of it, it makes it even harder to get your ROI in 4 years, $48 million. So I understand maybe the criticism there. And I think it's going to be very paramount to Nate Hobbs' success and trying to get the most that you can out of that 4 years, $48 million, that he stays healthy moving forward. In the past 3 years, that has not been the case for him at all. Number two, a complete and utter lack of playmaking, very much like an Adrian Amos, if you will, who was really good at what he did, but just did not make big plays. And if you look at the stats for Nate Hobbs in his career, in four seasons, he has three interceptions. In 4 years or four seasons, he has three sacks. In four seasons, he has two forced fumbles. If you add that up, three interceptions, three sacks, two forced fumbles in 4 years, that is eight big plays, basically two big plays per year. If we're counting forced fumbles, sacks, and interceptions as big plays, you're getting two of those per season. That's not a ton. That's not a ton. So if you're looking for somebody to come in and it's going to turn the ball over a ton and force a bunch of fumbles or pick off passes or get a bunch of sacks, Nate Hobbs is very specifically, at least up until this point in his career, not a playmaking player. On top of that, in his career, in four seasons, he has only 13 pass breakups, basically three per year. One every 139 pass snaps is Nate Hobbs breaking up a pass. So you are getting somebody who does not pick the ball off, does not get to the quarterback as a blitzer, does not force fumbles, and very rarely breaks up passes. If you are looking for a playmaker, Nate Hobbs is not that. He just isn't. Maybe he can turn into it. Maybe there's some projection there. He's got the talent to do it, but he has not been that in his career thus far. I did see this past season, when I went back and watched earlier tape of him, it did not seem, especially 2023, it did not seem to be as big of an issue. But I thought in 2024, he was tipping his blitzes a little bit too much, where it was kind of like clear and obvious that he was going to come off the edge. So I think he needs to work on disguising that just a little bit better. His feet will get stuck in mud at times. There was a play against Deontay Johnson when he was with Carolina where Hobbs was in the slot. Deontay Johnson was in the slot and Deontay Johnson gave him a little move and Hobbs' feet got stuck in mud a little bit. And then Johnson kind of juked him to the outside. Hobbs kind of took a step and then Johnson went back inside and just had acres of separation. So just needs to keep those feet moving and make sure that he's not overcommitting on a play, you know, when you get one of those really good route runners in the slot. So again, the big thing here just does get his feet stuck in mud from time to time. Tackling, we talked about just falling off of his tackles, just not completing the play. He's in the right position. He's a willing tackler. I've seen him do it. He knows how to tackle, just finding that consistency and not falling off those tackles and allowing broken tackles where you're allowing more yards than you should in those situations. I would like to actually see him play with a little bit better anticipation. There are times, there's a play in particular where there's an out and you can see him. You can see he sees it and he's about to trigger. And I'm sure there's always that piece of like, what if they're running an out and up and do I really want to jump this, et cetera, et cetera. But you can see he knows. And if he goes, it's probably going to be a pick six, but he just takes that little hesitation and then he kind of waits for that extra half the arm to come around and then he makes that jump and he doesn't get there in time to break up the pass and it ends up being a completion. And you can kind of see it on tape of like, oh, you knew it was coming. Like if you would have trusted your anticipation and trusted what you saw, not only is that broken up, you might have a pick six on the play. And I think there are times when you see him play with anticipation and it looks really, really good. And I think sometimes he gets maybe a little bit too cautious, a little bit too careful, not wanting to give up that big play, which by the way, has resulted in him not giving up big plays. But I think if he could play with just a tinge more anticipation, and maybe by the way, maybe having a Xavier McKinney behind you opens that up. You know, maybe having that big time range playmaker in the backfield makes it so that he feels, and that super safe guy, that if you do give up a play that McKinney's just going to get the guy to the ground right away. Maybe he feels more comfortable playing with that anticipation and jumping a route or two. And if he does, like, I think he's going to be put in positions to maybe being able to make a few more of those plays. So maybe that unlocks in Green Bay a little bit, but I would like to see him play with a little bit more anticipation. Let's see. Here was what I was kind of hinting at earlier of where he's, you can ask him to do everything. I do question if he's great at anything. He's a good blitzer. He's not a great blitzer. He's a good run defender. He's not a great run defender because of the tackling issues. He's a good outside corner. He's not a great outside corner. He's a good slot corner. He's not a great slot corner. He's good in man. He's good in zone. He's good in, but he's not great at any of it. So you are getting a player that knows how to play, can do a little bit of everything, but there's not anything that you look at that's just like, oh my goodness, look how great he is at this one thing. I do love it, the way that he attacks the run game and plays it. That's close to one, but it can't be great when you aren't the tackler that you need to be in those situations either. His change of direction in man coverage, his tips get a little bit tight. He plays a little bit high at times. That's something I think he can clean up a little bit. And then last but not least, we talked about the lack of playmaking. I would like to see him go for the ball a little bit more. I mean, that is a huge point of emphasis in the NFL of whether it's a peanut punch or getting the ball out and creating those turnovers. I don't know that I saw him rip at a ball or punch a ball or try to strip a ball. He's going for the tackle, which I appreciate, like make that tackle in the open field. I'd appreciate it more if he actually finished those tackles, but I'd like to see him go for a ball every now and again with how important the takeaway battle is in the modern NFL. I'm not saying to risk, you know, allowing a huge completion or like a run after the catch because you're just going ball hunting, but I'd like to see him find a way to force a couple more fumbles and just be a little bit more active when it comes to punching some of those balls loose. Those are the pros and cons, the highlights and the lowlights of Nate Hobbs and what I saw on tape. As far as his contract goes, I always look at it again this way. If he plays 1 year, it's going to be a 1 year, $18 million deal. If he plays 2 years, it's going to be a 2 year, $27 million deal, $13.5 million per year. If he plays 3 years in Green Bay, it's going to be a 3 year, $37 million deal, which is going to be $12.3 million per year. And if he plays 4 years, it'll be a 4 year, $48 million deal, which is $12 million per year. How he fits in Green Bay, I think he's going to be in base defense, your starting outside corner with Keyshawn Nixon. I think in big nickel, he's going to be your starting outside corner with Nixon and then Bullard in the slot. And then I think in your normal nickel, I think he's going to be in the slot with Valentine or maybe a different corner, depending on who they draft or if Jair stays, whatever. And then Nixon on the other side in your more obvious pass situation nickel. I think he's going to play some inside. I think he's going to play some outside. And how injuries affect the season, if you see Javon Bullard go down, I think we could see Nate Hobbs a lot more in the slot. If you see some of their outside corners go down, you're going to see a lot of Bullard in the slot and Hobbs not leaving the outside. So just again, gives you a lot of versatility and dependent upon how the season goes and what kind of injuries you have could go a long way in determining where he actually plays on the field. But I think you're going to see a little bit of all of it throughout the course of the season. I think the big question is, can he live up to that 4 year, $48 million contract? I think he has every right to. I think he's a good corner. I think they found a really nice piece in this secondary. I'm not unbelievably overwhelmed with excitement for Nate Hobbs. I think they found a good player. I really do. And I think he's going to be a solid starter for this secondary. I think he fits very well within the scheme. Do I think they found this unbelievable game changer that makes all these big plays? No. Do I think they found a shutdown corner? No. Do I think they found a nice player for the secondary? Absolutely. Absolutely. Do I think he can help them win games? I really, really do. My overarching verdict here, after watching specifically Aaron Banks and Nate Hobbs, is I think they got good to maybe really good player. I think they found two good players. I think they found an offensive lineman in Aaron Banks that's going to step in, play left guard. You're basically replacing Josh Myers with Aaron Banks on that starting offensive line. And I think that's going to be a big improvement. And I think in the secondary, Nate Hobbs fits everything that they want. I think he's going to be a good player in that secondary. On paper, it looked like they went out and got two players. You go and watch the tape, two good players. You go and watch the tape, and it feels like they went out and got two good players. I think a lot of us wanted to see a way for Gutekunst to navigate this offseason to maybe grab a couple of great players. I don't think they got that. I think they have two players that are going to help them, that are going to be good starters for this team, and that will help them win football games. And guess what? Spoiler alert, that's never a bad thing. That is never a bad thing. You can never have enough of that. I think Goody deserves the benefit of the doubt overall as an evaluator when it comes to the pro personnel side of exactly what he's able to do. And he's had a lot of success with these type of players in the past. And here's hoping that he's done it again and found two really good players for this team that maybe even can take that Za'Darius Smith jump. Meaning when Za'Darius was with the Ravens in his last season, you started seeing signs of it, but it didn't come to fruition yet. And then all of a sudden, by the time he got to Green Bay, that first year was a massive breakout season. Maybe for Aaron Banks and for Nate Hobbs, this is going to be their massive breakout season getting those contracts in Green Bay. It can definitely happen that way. Change of scenery, change of pace. Even Xavier McKinney had the best year of his career, right? Even though he had a really good career up until that point in New York, never to the level that he played in Green Bay this past year. So let's see what they can do in Green Bay. I like both of these signings. I don't say that I love either of them, but I think they do make sense. And I do think Green Bay found themselves two very nice players. That's going to do it for me today. I hope you enjoyed the deep dive of Nate Hobbs. If you haven't checked out the Mecole Hardman and Aaron Banks ones yet, make sure to go and do so. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wayne, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Stepkeet, Dylan Patscott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Razul Douglas Time, Jake Kohner, and Carla Delgado. I will see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.